And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. This is Martin Willis, your host, and we have Alejandro Rojas coming up with the news in just a few. Tonight we have Erica Lukes, Utah MUFON director, and she's going to be talking about her new show called UFO Audit, which is coming up first show this Friday. So we're going to talk to her about that and much more, of course. Well, I want to thank everyone for their support. And if you have not subscribed to us and you want to hear the second hour, simply go to our podcast site, which is podcastufo.com, and you'll see right on the right sidebar a real easy click and sign up. You only have to do that once, and you get a private link that you can put into iTunes or virtually any media player. And it's really easy to set up with an iPhone. And speaking of support, I've actually had a life change. My grueling job, my grueling commute has been changed to consulting work, if any. In other words, I'm unemployed. So my pipe dream is to make this show my focus. I know that is kind of a pipe dream, but I know there are a lot of you listeners out there, and if each of you could support my show for a dollar or more, well, by golly, I could actually do that, make this my focus. And I think as soon as possibly next week or the week after, I'm going to be going to College Park, Maryland, and it's going to be a great live show. I'd love to do more things like that. So help if you can, but if you can't help, that's okay. We still love each and every one of you. Well, anyone that signs up for a $10 or more per month, I will happily send you a free T-shirt. And speaking of that, you know, they haven't been real popular, I have to admit. I do have a graphic designer working on new designs. I'm going to post different designs that he gives me, and I'll post them up on Facebook and on the website, and I'll let you decide. I'll maybe set up a survey or something. Again, we still love every single listener out there. Really love doing the show. And now we have Alejandro Rojas. But Alejandro, I want to talk to you about your last guest, Ron Regeer.
Yes, Martin. Let's do that.
So that was, I help Alejandro out on his show. I help him with the news on that. And so I listened to the show, and Ron Regeer is a fascinating man. What a great show that is. And that's at openminds.tv. The podcast is right on that site that came out last Monday. I suggest to any of the listeners to the show, check that out. It's a great show with Ron. He was fascinating.
Yeah, he's great. And it's kind of funny because, his stories, if you wouldn't know any better, I don't think you would believe it. But I've known Ron for many years. I mean, ever since I've been in MUFON, he was a director, I think, in Utah. He was on the board. I think now he's some sort of functional director. So he's always been around and an aerospace engineer. And here and there over the years, I've asked him, talked to him about different things. You know, a lot of UFO researchers will mention him when they write about things because he's been associated to so many things along as the days of, you know, as the years have gone by. And it's so interesting how his career has been able to mix with his interest in UFOs and how he's kind of been part of these really important cases over the years. And I always, you know, he was like probably one of the first people I've wanted to interview when I started my show. And I just can't believe I haven't sat down and talked to him about all of this until recently. But a lot of people don't know about his fascinating background. And he's not the type to really hype himself. He's around at these conferences and stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people at these conferences where you strike up conversations with someone maybe you've seen 3 years in a row at the UFO Congress, and you ask about him, "Oh, yeah, I'm an engineer," or, "Sure, I used to work at NORAD, and we used to see some weird stuff." You know, these amazing people who are interested in this field.
Hey, wait a minute. Was he at the North Carolina conference?
I can't remember. Most likely, I can't remember for sure,
to be honest. A tall guy. There was a tall guy that was some type of engineer that I spoke with there, and I'm wondering if it might be.
He probably was. He goes to a lot of these often, and some of you who go to these may recognize him because he often has his dog with him that helps him, I think, with seizures. But he's often got a dog with him for those purposes at these conferences. But he's at a lot of them. Great guy. Very, very interesting.
Wow. Awesome. Well, so we're here to talk about news. So what's going on with the UFO? Yeah. What's going on with UFO news this week?
Well, I just finished my story on these Arctic UFOs. I'm sure you've seen the story because it's all over the place. In fact, I'm going to cover a couple stories that are big in the media, international media, and this is one of them. And I waited a little while to write about it because I knew there would be more work done, and I knew it would be a lot of work for me to research everything about them so I can write a concise story about what's going on here. But have you seen these photos? They're really amazing, of these alleged photos of UFOs taken from what appears to be a periscope of a U.S. Navy sub.
Yes. Wasn't John Greenwald involved in releasing these somehow?
Yeah, exactly. So what happened, that there's this researcher, Alex Mistretta, and he says that he received these photos from an anonymous source in Europe. Then he had heard that a French newspaper, paranormal magazine actually, called Top Secret, had published them. And so he looked at what information they had. It was similar to what he had. And so he decided to release these pictures on the Black Vault with information about what he had so that John Greenwald and others could help him investigate these photos. His anonymous source told him that these images were taken from the USS Trepang. Funny enough, Trepang, I guess, is a word for like a sea cucumber or something like this. But it's a real Navy sub. In March of 1971, when they were near Iceland, in between Iceland and an island called Jan Mayen up in the Arctic, and that there was an admiral on board called Dean Reynolds, and there was also an officer, John Kilka, who is the one who saw what appeared to be what he called an accident. So I guess appeared to see this UFO, even though there's several of them, crash and I guess having some kind of mechanical issue and crashing or something like that, or being shot at. It's kind of vague. So really interesting. He posts these stories with the pictures. They quickly then went to research what's going on with these images. So they got a hold of Steve Murillo, who runs the UFO and paranormal meetup in Los Angeles. And the reason they contacted him is that he was a Navy pilot, and they asked him if he could help them get in contact with these two gentlemen, I gave you the wrong name for the admiral, too. His name was Sackett, Dean Reynolds Sackett. So Admiral Sackett and Officer Kilka. And they were able to get a hold of him. So Marilla called Sackett, and Mistretta was able to get a hold of Officer Kilka. They said, yeah, we were on the Trepang in March of 1971, and we were in the Arctic in that area. And John Greenwald was able to actually verify that those guys were on the ship separately, even before they contacted him, and that the ship was in the area. However, they said, we did not see anything strange. We don't know what those images are. And as far as we know, nobody saw anything strange. So the story was false. And Mistretta has said, it turns out that, the information I got from my source is false. So who knows what's going on here?
So this is a little turn of events here.
Well, here's the problem. Even though the national media and everybody has picked it up, nobody is telling the story about the investigation that Greenwald and Mistretta and Murillo have done. They've done a lot of great investigative work here. But that's not being covered, unfortunately. And they've done some great work. In fact, Greenwald went on to do some research. He thought the objects looked like they might be balloons. He also found on the website where he was able to trace where the Trepang was to confirm it was in that area. He said that when it was out there, they were doing testing and scientific experiments. So he looked up test balloons. Sure enough, he found some pictures of these gigantic balloons that looked very similar to what is in the images. I went to Wikipedia and looked at these balloons, and I found some similar ones myself. Now, these images are from the early 1900s of these weird balloons. I nor Greenwald could find any from the 70s. But, yeah, I think Greenwald's kind of cracked the case here. I think that's what these are, kind of test balloons that they fire at, and they practice shooting down.
Oh, because there is one that looks like it's exploding or something.
Yeah, there's a couple images of these things exploding and sinking into the ocean, and that's what makes them so spectacular and wonderful. They're really cool-looking pictures. But none of that has been completely confirmed yet, like, you know, where they were from or when. It's possible they're completely fabricated, Photoshopped hoaxes. But I think Greenwald seems to be on the right track. If you look at the balloons in the images compared to what's these alleged UFO photos, I think that he's figured it out. So really cool investigation, great work. Unfortunately, the investigation isn't being covered, which I think really kind of sucks, to put it bluntly, because you know, they try to portray UFO researchers as these, like I wrote it in my sort of wild-eyed believers, when actually a lot of them are really good researchers who are looking for the truth. There's some great research that's been done here. In fact, Mistretta is going to talk more about it on July 21st. Murillo, holds this meetup in Los Angeles, and Mistretta is going to be there to talk about it. So people in the L.A. area who want to meet these guys can do that. And we've got a link in our story to that meetup. So that's the story.
Awesome. Well, that's good investigative work by everyone.
Yep.
It really is. Okay, so what else is happening?
What else is happening is another story that's making the news. It's on CNN and everywhere, and this is the Welsh government replying to UFO questions in Klingon. We talked about this, I think, a little bit on my show, but yes. I have a little more information. I interviewed Nick Pope yesterday. It'll be on our next UFO report on YouTube about this. But what happened is, this Welsh Assembly Minister in the Assembly for Clwyd West, he asked a question about UFOs. He said, you know, our Cardiff airport, how many UFOs have been seen above it? Have the Welsh government worked with the Ministry of Defense regarding UFOs? Has the Welsh government looked into UFOs? And the response has been to make fun of him and trash this guy. So, I mean, right. A lot of people have said, oh, that's funny, that's great, Welsh government's so cool, especially because Comic-Con's going on. But really, it's really condescending and not very cool of them. You know, they're obviously not taking him serious at all. So they replied in Klingon. They said, Jean Vidak, Joshis, Katz, Luz, Katz. I don't know, some kind of crazy Klingon stuff. But what it means is the minister will reply in due course. However, this is a non-devolved manner. And we asked, you know, Nick Pope about that. He says what he means by a non-devolved matter is that the Ministry of Defense does not consult the Welsh government. It's kind of above them. And they don't, you know, go downwards. They don't tell you, hey, Welsh government, here's what we're working on. So they're kind of already alluding to, like Nick Pope says, to passing the buck, which is something he says he did when he worked for the Ministry of Defense. Mm. And that is common, that they're probably going to say, we don't know, ask the Ministry of Defense. For which, of course, the Ministry of Defense has answered and talked about that issue often. Unfortunately, one of the assembly sources, an anonymous assembly sources, had kind of replied off the record. And he says the only extraterrestrial life seen near Cardiff recently seems to be Darren Miller. Perhaps instead of spending time and wasting government resources asking questions about UFO, he should be fighting for the very real concerns of his constituents.
Oh, you bloke, you.
That prissy British. Oh, man. But it was because of his constituents. He was asking these questions because they were coming from his constituents. So kind of frustrating. Nick Pope replied in a tweet. He says, replying to an assemblyman's question on the UFOs in Klingon is a great way to ridicule the subject. I did similar things at the MOD. Kapla. Kapla is another Klingon term for success. And in fact, I have him do this. If you want to see Nick Pope speaking Klingon, you can watch our interview that we'll have out on Friday. But he essentially says, you know, he called it spinning dirty tricks that when he was working for the MOD about UFOs, they would do things like this to make fun of UFOs. However, in the background, they were taking the reports very, very seriously, although they were pretending not to. Something else I put in my story that I think is very interesting is that in 2012, Huffington Post wrote about a poll that was done in the UK about UFOs, and they found that 52% believe UFO evidence has been covered up because widespread knowledge of their existence would threaten government stability. So, I mean, if you look at this Welsh story or even this Navy story, it was the UK media that picked it up. The UK media even references our website practically on a weekly basis these days. And these are some of their bigger papers, like The Mirror, The Daily Express. Their newspapers out there are certainly more tabloid-like. But they write about UFOs much more over there, it seems, especially per capita than we do over here. So UK people are really into UFOs. So hopefully, I mean, there's a backlash. I just don't think that these politicians should be making light of real concerns from their citizens.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's par for the course. It's status quo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of funny that the UK you know, has so many reports or so many, you know, articles only because of the fact that, you know, when I speak to people from over there, they say, well, we never get to see UFOs. It's always cloudy or rainy. Not always, but, you know, a lot.
Yeah, which is a good point. I mean, it's difficult to know because, you know, there are some organizations out there, but it's difficult because it's not really apples to apples to tell if they have more reports or not. But we do know in our own country that the sunnier areas do seem to have more sighting reports. So it's entirely possible. And it could be why they're so interested in other people's sightings, because a lot of the stories they run over there are U.S. Sighting reports. So, for instance, when I wrote, we talked about this recently, about June having a spike in sightings. They ran with that story out there, and I don't even know if the American media picked it up, but the UK media picked it up like crazy, which was really cool. So they're really interested in sightings, even if they don't happen in the UK, not like the US, where we could really give a damn what happens in other countries for the most part.
Good point there. So you have one more. We'll have to make it a little bit short because we're running a little bit late here.
I'll do it really quick. Speaking of Americans not giving a damn about what happens in other countries, here's a great UFO story from another country. This is just a story about some Turkish pilots who recall some UFO sightings. They're commercial airline pilots, essentially, who had a couple really cool experiences. One pilot just said that, you know, he was up and him, along with four aircraft in total, saw this extremely bright light. They couldn't even look at it directly. It was so incredibly bright. So really neat story there. And then another story from another pilot who said they saw some multicolor lights that flew around and eventually turned into a white ball before disappearing. So really cool sightings. And funny enough, the space editor, I think he writes for MSNBC these days, but he's written for a lot, space.com and everything. Jim Oberg replied to my story. He does that sometimes. And it was kind of funny. He says, And your reason for thinking the story was significant without providing a date, time, or location of it was what exactly? Especially on an air route passing close to the Beknur Cosmodrome. So his point being that, you know, in that flight path is a very popular place where they launch rockets. And that's a great point. But, of course, he's being silly about his first question. But the reason I bring that up, because it's a great question. Why do we care? Because they're commercial pilots. And I think you might agree, and certainly our readers agree, that stories from commercial airline pilots are very interesting because these are people who are flying and up in the air, you know, quite a bit. In fact, Obama's, you know, pilot for when he was a candidate came out speaking about UFOs fairly recently, and that was a big story. People just really like to hear from airline pilots. And what was interesting about Obama's pilot is that he said most pilots believe in UFOs, and these two pilots say they believe in it as well. So I think that's very interesting. What do you think?
Absolutely. You know, I seem to talk quite a bit about Seth Shostak because I did when I was debating him on UFOs way back in show number 21 or 22, I can't remember. You know, I brought that up about, you know, these are people more like trained observers, like astronauts and pilots and things like that. And he said, absolutely not. They're no different than anyone else. And, you know, it makes no difference. I was kind of shocked by that because I would think anyone, you know, flying a plane would really need to know what's going on up there and really pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really frustrating. I mean, it's someone like Seth Shostak will discount pilots, even though pilots are in the air. That's where they're spending their career. The rest of us don't have a career looking up in the sky. Mm-hmm. But Shostak will also say, well, why don't astronomers see UFOs and why aren't they into UFOs? And they are.
They are.
Yeah. I did a talk in Roswell about this where it was really astronomers who started the modern day research into UFOs. So there, Mr. Shostak.
Yeah, there you go. Well, hey, thanks so much. We ran a little long, but it was fun. It was good. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I have one more thing to mention. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
But speaking of astronomers and UFOs, Clyde Tombaugh's in the news a lot because he's the one who discovered Pluto, and he was one of those astronomers who saw UFOs. And there was a Life magazine story about it in the 50s, which was a huge deal and really rekindled the public's interest in UFOs. But that's an interesting story that you see out there in the news these days because of everything going on with Pluto.
Right, and I hope the listener out there has checked out the images of Pluto. It is really something to see something like that. You know,
yeah,
showing
really
the,
cool.
Some of the mountain ranges, and, you know, it's an icy planet, but, boy, it's really actually great to be able to see that.
Amazing stuff.
It's amazing what mankind can do, really, if you think about it. It takes 4 hours for the signal the speed of light to reach the Earth.
Yeah. Call me a Pollyanna, but I think humans are pretty cool sometimes.
I'm there with you, man. All right.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot, and I'll be talking to you next week.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. So everyone hang in there. We'll be right back after this quick music break with Erica Lukes. Erica Lukes, how are you? Did you unmute your mic, Erica?
Yeah. Oh, I think I did now. That's me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay.
This only happens on live radio. by the way.
I know, of course.
Welcome to the show.
We'll just wait for the cat to come in and, you know, pull the mic down like she did last time, so.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes, and we follow, I don't know if you follow each other on Facebook. Whatever you do on Facebook, we do. So we've had some nice little back and forths for a while. And so I was excited to have you on and talk about who you are, what you do, and we got some time to fill. So let's talk about how you got interested in the topic to begin with.
You know, I've always been interested in it. And I remember when I was 6 years old, standing in my school library, and I saw a book with a UFO on the cover. And I picked it up, and it was like this attraction. And from there on out, I just read everything I could find. I did a lot of research into the paranormal phenomena, and I was drawn to it. I'm a very intuitive person and an artist by trade, and so it just came naturally to me to want to learn more about something like this.
Now, so you started out that young, are you saying? Now, did you have any siblings that shared your interest or anything?
You know, I was an only child, and clearly, maybe that explains a lot. Who knows? But I was always creative and imaginative, and I always had this yearning for studying this type of thing because I knew there was something much deeper going on. And I felt connected to it.
I see. You know, it's funny. My son's an only child. And I think that a lot of times, and I know a few others, these people seem to be very creative because, you know, you're spending a lot of time with yourself as you're young and, you know, entertaining yourself. And, you know, there's a certain creative element that seems to fall along with the only child, you know?
You're not kidding. Just ask my mom that. She would vouch for that. But, you know, I think it was great for me. I mean, I used to put on little plays in my bedroom and just sing and dance, and I loved that. And I think because that's the way I processed things, that perhaps I was a little bit more open to intuition and the paranormal and UFOs and things like that. So it's always been fascinating. And I remember picking up communion when I was in high school. And that just sent me reeling.
Yeah. You know, it's funny how many times that same story you're just saying right there, not high school, but there's so many people that have been on this show that book has, you know, really changed the way they think. And I've never even, you know, I have the book sitting on my shelf, but until just recently, like last Friday, I had no time to do anything, and now I have all the time in the world. And
well, no, because you're going on a tour. You're going across the country to come visit me.
Okay. All right. Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
I am going to say that anyone in the chat room, if you'd like to pose a question for Erica, you can go ahead. And Erica's actually in there, so be kind to her. And also, if anyone would like to call into the show, our number, as always, is 603-967-4030. You know what I just thought of? I should post that on the website or somewhere so I don't have to keep saying it over and over again. But, you know, Erica, we do get – occasionally we get a call during a show. Not a lot of people are active in the chat room usually but don't call. So don't hold out for that. You can say whatever you want to say. Time goes on. You go through high school. You read that. Did you continue, like, on that path? I'm sure you had careers and perhaps college or whatever study you did. How did all that go?
You know, I started studying classical voice when I was 16, and I was in a lot of different bands in Utah and performed. Did that for a career. So my background was vocal performance, and then I became a master Pilates instructor and opened a business, and I've had a business for 15 years, teaching Pilates and certifying Pilates instructors. And the whole time I've been researching and reading everything I could get my hands on about the UFO phenomena, about abductions, and the paranormal as well, because I've had an interesting experience with the paranormal, and I lived in a haunted house. It was very, very cool. So I've had lots of interesting experiences around me, and it's been fantastic.
Well, when you, I have to, you know, I know this is a UFO show, but you know I'm going to have to ask you about the haunted house.
Okay. So. And I wiped, it was the coolest thing. We moved into, I'm not even going to tell you how old I was. That's just too depressing. But we moved into a house that was 100 years old. And at the time, my husband was working late at night. And so I would just see things. The toilet lid would be up, the seat, which was odd. And I would notice that, I mean, literally a candle would just fly off the shelf. All of these things started to happen. And I thought it was a little odd and kept excusing what was going on around me and rationalizing it. And then one night I was going to bed, walked through the kitchen, and I noticed a man leaning against the counter. Mm. And I thought that, okay, it's my husband. Went into bed, and he was in bed, asleep. So I immediately woke him up, and I just said, oh, my Lord, I've been seeing this. This is what's been happening. And he said, thank you. I've been not purposely saying anything, and I wanted to see what you had to say, because I've been seeing a man in our house for months.
Mm. Wow.
So it was a really interesting experience. I think we were both intuitive, but then we would have, you know, I kind of panicked. I thought, oh, my Lord, where are we living? And so I called out a group, and they investigated. In fact, they did several investigations and, you know, caught the typical EVPs, saw apparitions. I mean, it was very, very cool. Whatever was there was definitely some sort of, I felt like a benevolent force. And I have to say, when I left the house, I was very sad.
Hmm. Well, you know, since we're talking ghosts already, I'm going to just tell a quick,
oh dear,
a quick ghost story. And that has only come up, I think, once in 159 shows here. But anyway, my father owned a house in southern Maine, and it was a very early house, around early 1700s. And the house had already been moved once, and it had a history, a really interesting history that, well, not kind of a sad history, but it was attacked by Native Americans or Indians, whatever you want to say. And they killed the children, which was really sad, and they took the wife, the woman, away. And in the middle of the night, she got up. This is a true story. She got up in the middle of the night, and she found a knife. She stabbed the Indian and the whatever it was with her shelter or whatever, and escaped and went back to the house. Well, that was a story about that. Well, my father owned this house, and my sister had an operation, and she said, Dad, I saw a little girl. And he says, yeah, I see her all the time. And all these weird things, they'd see. My sister described it as a little girl in a white dress that looked like old-fashioned. And she'd see, and then she wouldn't see it, and then she'd see through it, and, you know, on and on. So I didn't pay, you know, I said, wow, you know, and all that. Here I am in, like, high school or something, so I didn't really pay that much attention to it. Well, the land was sold. A big mall came in. The house was moved again down the street about a half a mile or so. So I stopped in there one day because it was an antique shop, and I got to talk to the antique dealer. And I finally got up the courage, and I said, has anyone ever talked about this place being haunted? And he looks at me, he goes, do you mean the little girl in the white dress? I mean, that's pretty amazing to me.
And that is so incredible.
And so he said, go talk to the accountants. They've seen her too. So there was accountants inside, and I went in and talked to him, and one of them started laughing. She goes, I don't want to talk about it.
Isn't that incredible? You know, when the house that I lived in was so active. I mean, I would have, and these are really skeptical people, come over. They were my friends, lots of them engineers. So they would, you know, yeah, well, yeah, whatever. And, you know, pretty soon they'd have an experience, and it was a little shocking for them. But after, you know, I lived there for a while, the house was on TV, and it was in a local magazine. And I had somebody Facebook me, actually, and said, oh, did you live at such and such an address? Because I lived next door to that house back when I was 10 years old, and my girlfriend and I were down in the basement, and we had an experience that scared us so much that we ran to our bishop, And the bishop said to never talk about it again, and here we are.
Wow. You know, I know the listener out there comes to listen to the show for UFOs, so you have to forgive me. But, you know, the thing that comes up occasionally is people talk, you know, where there's ghosts, there's UFOs, there's Bigfoot, there's, you know, cryptoids, there's all kinds of weird things going on at once, you know. I don't know if any of that's true or not, if there's any type of relation, but there is some type of answer for what's happening. And I think, you know, it's elusive as UFOs in general, but also, you know, I don't know if they'll ever be figured out. Same thing as UFOs. You know, I hope they will, but I don't know if they actually will or not.
You know, I think that for me, the more I learn about this subject, the more I probably lean towards saying that this phenomena is, you know, the paranormal, the ghosts, this could be connected with the UFO phenomena. When you're looking at abductions, many people that have had abduction experiences will see the orbs by their bed. And, you know, the bottom line is we don't know. It's unexplained. And until we're willing to really put effort into it and serious research and quit debating whether they're here or not, I think there's enough evidence to say they are. So now what are we going to do about it? How are we going to research this phenomena and work together?
Right, right. So, Erica, you are now the director of MUFON of Utah?
I am state director for Utah MUFON, and I love it. There's so much going on in this state. It's just been fun.
I can understand a lot of times we talk about there's more sightings and where there's clearer skies. I think that definitely plays into it when you think of places like England, which we spoke about earlier in the news, how, you know, it's cloudy there a lot, it's rainy there a lot. But in states like California, Arizona, and Utah, I'm sure, Nevada, there's a lot of sunshine, and which means clear skies and probably more sightings.
Right. And I think that we do have a lot of sightings in Utah. Now, my job as state director is to encourage people to report them.
Yeah.
Because, wow, you know, we have this is Skinwalker Ranch territory.
Oh, right. Now, speaking of that, you know, we've had a couple of guests on recently where two weeks in a row, so I won't belabor it too much, but where we talk about the amount of UFO sightings compared to the actual reports. And I'm sure you see exactly that, right?
Yes, exactly.
And I don't know, you know, we can't fill out reports for people. You know, that's just, they have to do it themselves. And, you know, there's got to be a lot of psychology that goes along with the reason why people won't do that.
I think there is. And I think, you know, some of it is, up until now, it's been really, really hard. Where do you go to report stuff? I know when I had my sightings in Utah, the first thing I did was try to contact the FAA. And I learned that lesson really quickly.
Yeah.
But when you go to the FAA's website, at the time when I went there, they referred you to Bigelow Aerospace and then to New Fork. And so, and the number for Bigelow was out of service. And in New Fork, Peter Davenport was fantastic. But there was nobody here in Utah really actively researching what was going on. So I hope that I can encourage people, not only here, but all over, to take the time, go to MUFON, file a report, because this is vital to our research.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about research. Are you active in actually researching cases, or, you know, being the director, is that a different type of role?
You know, I do both. It's challenging because I have right now, I'm building up a chapter that was basically defunct. And so I've stepped in, and we had a really small number of members, and I'm rebuilding that, and then I'll get cases and try to research them and run a business and have a family. I do a lot of work for MUFON headquarters as well, but it's a work in progress.
Wow. Okay, so I've just been sort of corrected on the chat room. We have a listener in the chat room from South England, and it must be like in the middle of the night there, isn't it? He calls himself, I love Martin. I love that guy. Anyway, so he says it's clear most of the time there, so I take that back. I stand corrected. And so I would be interested to hear, like earlier on in the newscast, we were talking about how there are so many stories about UFOs in the UK press. So it would be interesting to actually find out exactly why and what the general thoughts were there. So
maybe we should go over there. You should go over there on your tour.
I should, yeah, since I'm unemployed. I'll go anywhere. Anywhere the wind blows or the UFOs blow, any, you know, float,
exactly.
I will go. Yeah. So it's 1:40 in the morning. Thanks for joining us over there and listening live. And speaking of that, if you are listening live, you can jump in the chat room. That's at podcastufo.com and ask our guest tonight a question. Again, the phone number, 603-967-4030. And I have to say that a couple of times I've missed calls because a little behind the scenes here, you know, I've got three different computers set up, and the calls come in on one that's to my hard right, and sometimes I miss a call. And if I do, I apologize. So, Erica, if you happen to see one pop up and I don't get it, stop what you're saying and say
okay.
Something if you would.
Okay.
Yeah. So you do actually some of the investigating yourself, but a busy life. Most people have busy lives that are involved in MUFON.
We do, and I think an important thing to remember is that this is a volunteer organization. When I first joined MUFON, I was absolutely shocked at the amount of money that people spend from their own personal funds, the time commitments, and the patience and the perseverance that they put into researching this. Most of them never get any attention for their great contributions, and it's something that needs to change, and I really hope people realize that we need volunteers, we need support, we need donations to help us get really great equipment to research this. MUFON, I have loved my experience in MUFON.
And how many years?
I've been there for 2 years.
Oh, 2 years, and you're already the director. Wow.
Well, you know, I'm a quick mover.
Yeah. So just a few minutes ago, you mentioned something about a sighting you had. So can you tell us about that?
Yes. It was 2013. I live in an area of Salt Lake, and I have an amazing view. And so I would sit down on my deck and have a barbecue, have the friends over. And I would get, you know, I'd just see the beautiful sunsets. I could tell what aircraft was coming in and all of that, the normal activity. And I'd noticed one night as I was watching the sunset, I'd noticed this bright orange sphere. And I thought, okay, that's very odd. The light was different than it would be if it were a plane. It was amazing. And I watched it for quite some time. Grabbed my binoculars. I had some friends over. And then I noticed that there was, you know, a big object, and then it appeared that another one dropped out of the smaller object. The object went around in a circle around the bigger object. And I just sat there like, all righty, really?
Wow.
And to me, you know, we were just in shock. But, you know, then as I looked through the binoculars, there were no discerning. I mean, it was a solid light. I couldn't see any landing lights. And it was pretty shocking. After that, I began to set up my video equipment every night. And almost like clockwork, these objects would appear. And sometimes they would appear from the base of a mountain and move up. And one, you know, this object would move up and just hover. And then it would go away, and then another one would rise up at the same location and hover and then follow the same flight path. And it did it a third time. And you watch this and you just think, oh, my Lord, am I the only person in the world that's seeing this? So that's what set me in motion, and it set me on the path of reaching out to New Fork, talking to MUFON, realizing that we need to have some serious investigation here in Utah.
Now, do you still live in the same place you did in 2013?
I do.
And are these things still going on? Is it still happening?
They are. And I wish that I had as much time as I did back then to sit out on the porch. They are. We're still getting reports. Many reports are over the Kennecott Copper Mines, which I find interesting, and the Ochre Mountains. So they're the same places that I observe these objects. I'm in the process of doing a research project with MUFON called Project Orange. And we are specifically researching the orange orb phenomena.
Is that with Bob Davis? Is that the right person?
It's with Robert Spearing and Terry Ray.
Terry Ray, that's who I was thinking of. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you just mentioned the copper quarries or whatever it is that you just said, because I'm trying to remember, is it Brown Mountain? Yeah, Brown Mountain Lights.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing, that's a real hot spot, and there's many, many, many sightings in the Brown Mountain area. And also, it has a high content of copper right in that valley right there. And I'm wondering, you know, I hear you talking about this. There seems to be a link, because I think that's the third time I've heard something about that. Now, it's very, very possible that this could be some type of natural phenomenon that happens because of copper and, say, you know, it's kind of like how you make a battery. You know, I mean, you get different elements. You know what? I'm going way out of my field here, and I'm probably going to say something totally wrong. But anyway, it's a possibility that something like that has a natural element to it.
Yeah, I agree with that, and there are people, you know, and of course that's something that we have to rule out when we're investigating. But the thing that is becoming apparent is that these objects are moving with intelligence. And they're, in some cases, they're responding to people and a person's awareness of the object. So I think that there might be a little bit more going on, but that's part of the research project, you know, process. How do you definitively say it is not that, so now we move on to this?
Right. Well, that would, you know, when something has an element like that that can't be explained, then that's, you know, it moves further and further away from a natural course. Of course it does. Any updates on the July 4th part of Project Orange? That's on the message board.
Oh, and I love that. Thank you for asking that. So right now, Robert Spearing is going through all of the July 4th sightings reports. He's been amazing. And he's almost got all of the states done with the help of my assistant state director. And he's had to put in weather data, really weed out the good cases and cases that are not, cases that would be Chinese lanterns. I hate to even say that.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're gaining lots of headway there. And then we have to get into the real nuts and bolts of the study and start identifying how the objects are behaving. Is there a specific time of day? Where are the sightings clusters? And one of my tasks is to have a map where I can layer, you know, the mines, mineral content, rare earth content. I would like to do, you know, the military installations, the aeronautical charts, bodies of water. You know, we've had lots of reports of these objects over radio towers. So you could go anywhere with this, and I think we definitely need to start doing some cool stuff with maps and figuring out why these objects are attracted to specific areas.
Now, are there a lot of other sightings of different, you know, well, I want to say crafts, or do you hear about the triangle sightings out there?
We do. And they're, you know, we get a few of those. Honestly, 80% of the case reports are the orbs.
Really? That high?
Yeah. Yep.
Amazing. And on a regular basis, like, you know, we just, as happenstance is, we had someone from MUFON last week. I'm not doing this on purpose. It just happened like that. And I just want to know, he was saying that, I believe he said they get about 16 to 30 reports a month in that state, which is pretty high for, you know, because it's a small state. Do you know approximately how many reports roll in per month?
Oh, boy. You know, I am very sad to say that it's between 8 and 10.
Uh-huh. Well, again, you know, I mean, statistically, if you look at it that way, there's probably a heck of a lot of them happening and only 8 or 10 roll in.
You know, that's one of the things. It's raising public awareness and letting people know that there is a place to file a report. And a really cool thing is that MUFON has been working very hard to revamp the CMS and the way people can input reports. I think that changing that up and making it more accessible will be helpful, and we'll see our numbers increase with reports.
You know, I think the average person today, with all the information coming at them in every which way, the average person has a shorter attention span than ever, you know. So, yeah, you'd have to, anything you're doing today, you have to keep that in mind and, you know, make things as simple as possible. You know,
that's kind of sad, isn't it?
Technology is dumbing us down.
Yeah. I really think that is the case. It's too bad because now we're so, you know, fixed to our iPhones and we're always looking down and we never pay attention to our surroundings.
That's
right.
You
miss out on a lot of really, really profound, amazing things.
That's right. Yep. We're, this is way, way off topic, but last year I took a couple of days off and I couldn't use my phone or computer and I was jonesing for it. I was like crawling the walls for the first day, and then the second day I never wanted to go back to him again. You know,
it's like a pacifier, I think.
Yeah, it does something to you chemically to check your email. There was some type of report about that, how it's almost like some type of addiction on how we need to keep checking our email or keep being in touch. You know, when the world is going around right there and we were glued to it. We have a question up on the message board. Do you have any suggestions on equipment for the amateur observer, watcher, camera, lens, computer, et cetera?
You know, that's another great question. And we need more people like you because we need people that are out there doing it with good equipment. You know, anything with that, if you can get it at night vision, anything with the night vision is fantastic. I have a pair of night vision binoculars, Night Jaguar. I just love that name that I am using right now. Those are great. You have to make sure you don't look at the city lights with them. I learned that one the hard way. But that's wonderful. It is incredibly difficult to take photos of a moving object at night. And so I have been working with our photo analyst here trying to hone in on what I need to do to make that happen a little bit better. And so I will keep you guys posted on that as we learn more stuff. And Wilbur Allen has taken some amazing videos and photo. I'm hoping next week I can talk with him and just pick his brain about good equipment.
Yeah, that's it. You know, this is the first time this has ever happened to me. I live on top of a mountain in Maine, and I don't know if the listener can hear it, but there's coyotes howling in the background. I've never heard that. This is the first time.
And wow.
It must be the government. Because I'm talking about UFOs now.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm actually way too relaxed tonight, so you're going to have to do the rest of the show.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
That could be really frightening for you, I'm telling you.
So speaking of that, we have only a few more minutes. We do take a quick break. It's just a little, like, 5-second break at the top of the hour, but let's talk about your show that is starting this Friday.
I am so excited. It's called UFO Audit on KGRA Radio. I will be interviewing some of the top researchers in the field, like you, and also my goal and what I'm going to be doing is honoring a member of the community. And this Friday, I am going to be talking about James Clarkson, who's an amazing investigator. He's been with MUFON for a long, long time. He is the state director up in Washington State, and he's written a couple books, one specifically on June Crane. So it'll be fun to honor and talk about people that have made a great contribution in the field.
Wow. And do you have, I know what it's like, of course, to run a show, and, you know, we could guess it's thick and thin, but usually people I've noticed in this field, because I used to do a podcast with comedians, and which was a lot of fun, I got to say, but you know, booking a comedian is not easy, especially if they're a headliner or a name. Are you finding that you have guests lined up ahead of time?
You know, I have been really lucky. I have been working hard, and I think because of the work I've done for MUFON, people have a good idea of who I am. So I have Peter Robbins, Denise Stoner, Paula Harris, Richard Dolan, and so I think it'll be great. You know, I mean, I've got all of these wonderful people, and they're all people that I've developed relationships with and have a lot of respect for. There are many other people that I've found as well that are witnesses, experiencers, and these people need to have a platform to tell their story as well.
Now, tell us what station you're on. What's that station you're on?
It's KGRA Radio.
Oh, that's right, KGRA. I may have been on that for a short time, or I might be confusing with it. Now, I was on one for a very short time, and I can't remember what the heck happened. But I'm sure you'll have a good run.
Well, we'll have to get you on there.
Well, just to back up a little bit, I heard you, I believe you said that I was a researcher. I am not a researcher, just to let you know. But I just have, I guess I could be called an armchair researcher, but I just am into the topic. I enjoy the topic. I enjoy speaking to intelligent and interesting people and hearing everybody's thoughts on what could possibly be going on. That's what really keeps me glued to it and gets me excited to just hear different perspectives. And, you know, it'd be interesting to, I would like for you to, I'll just throw this at you, if you'd like to just bring up the topic with Richard Dolan when he's on about where he stands now with the alien slides from May 5th. I'd like to know how he feels after the whole thing kind of crumbled. Some people saying it's not crumbled, but so we can talk a little bit more about that in the second half. We just have a couple of minutes left here, and I thought I saw, I thought I had a question up there. But it was actually a compliment to you, which is
good. I know, Phil. Thank you. You really made my night. That makes me very happy.
Well, I was telling everyone in the message room to be kind because I'll just leave it at that.
Well, they're being very kind, and I appreciate the support, and it's nice to have good feedback.
And if anyone would like to call in, we'll be taking a break here in a second, and it's a 603-967-4030. And so your show, how did that come about?
Since I have a background in music and I've done, you know, all of this performing, I've done radio voiceovers, recorded lots of CDs. To me, it's a very fun, natural thing. And when I started to work for MUFON headquarters, I was doing some video things for them. And I have guest hosted the MUFON radio show, which I really love to do. I'm like you. I love to talk to people and connect and to allow people to share their stories. And so it just, one thing led to another. And then Race Hobbs was fantastic. And we decided to do the show. And here we are.
Wow. Well, I do have to say you're very relaxing to talk to. You have a very nice voice. So that's why I feel so relaxed.
Thank you.
Besides being unemployed. Yeah. Both of that. I'm not going to harp on that too much. Well, that's it for this part of the show. If you'd like to support the show for as little as $1 a month or more, you can go to our podcast website, podcastufo.com, and start from there. It's an easy thing to do, and I'd really appreciate it. And So next week is possible. I may be going to Maryland. I'm going to try to work that out. If not, it'll be fairly soon. And so I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. First of all, Alejandro Rojas for the news and Keith Rowland for producing the Dark Matter Radio Network. I want to thank Peggy for managing the Facebook page. Remember, you can like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. And that will do it for the show this evening. Thanks so much, everyone. And we'll be seeing you next week. Keep your eyes to the sky.